Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, it's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show, and I'm very, very pleased today to be speaking to somebody who gets mentioned on nearly every single conversation that I have with people, because I talk about, quite often I bore people with my insights that I've had, or especially the first initial insight I had around 5 years ago. It might even be longer than that now. And people probably fed up on me talking about that particular insight when I was listening to George Pransky have a chat with Jamie Smart. And for some reason, I've interviewed many of the people who've been around the three principles for a long time, but I've never actually asked George to come on before. I think I just mentioned to George, and I put him on a bit of a pedestal, and I thought, oh, I'm too scared to speak to George. He's one of the superstars of the three principles. But eventually I got over that thinking, and I invited him on, and he's agreed, and here he is. So welcome, George. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. Well, today.
It's a pleasure, Mark. I'm glad that you reached out. I'm glad to do this.
I like
that you're doing all these interviews and helping, you know, introducing people to this understanding. So you're making a big contribution by doing that.
Well, thank you, Joe. It's become a bit of a passion of mine and a hobby, and like I said, it just feels right. I think I do. People know I have my own little style. I can be a bit silly, and I just like going with the flow, and I'm making it fun as well, you know. So, George, like I said, I've spent quite a bit of time with your cousin Jack over in Spain.
Yeah.
My partner's arranged quite a few of three principles events here in Spain. And I've met you a couple of times, like you said before, in the UK at the TICAM conference. And like I said, I was very impacted by you around 5 years ago when I heard you speaking with James Smart. I'm just wondering now, you've been around this understanding for, well, how many decades is it you've been around this understanding now, George?
Oh, my word, since 1976.
So since you was a boy, awesome. Then, really.
Yeah.
So one of my first questions that I quite often like to ask people who've been around this for a long time is, how does it seem the sharing of it has changed for you over the last, I'll say, or even over the last 5 years? Has there been a change in how you share the understanding?
That's a good question. I think if there's a general trend, it would be that it's kind of simplified in my mind. There's less to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like way back when I was first hearing it, it seemed like there was an awful lot to say, you know.
Yeah.
An awful lot of things you had to get across in order to get it across to people. And now it looks like it is not as much to say. A little bit goes a long way. So I think that's been a big change. The other change is way back when I used to talk a lot about the role of thought and how thinking plays out in people's lives. And now I talk about that less and talk more about, you know, the potential that people have inside themselves to understand.
Hmm.
You know, so what people bring to the table, you might say.
Right.
I don't think people realize how much they have going for them.
Yes. And when you say, I think I've got a feeling for what you mean by that, but would you like to elaborate on that when you say you don't think people realize the potential they've got?
Yeah, well, you know, people, if you take someone who knows nothing about the principles and nothing about psychology, if you observe them, you'll see that there's a lot of powerful things that's happening with them that they don't really see or appreciate. So, for example, human beings do get over things without working on it, making themselves get over it. They do go to higher levels of understanding. So if you talk to someone and talk to them about when they were in high school, for example, they'll all say, well, I would have done things a lot differently. There are a lot of things in high school that I worried about that were totally ridiculous, that I worried about those things. And other things that I didn't have my eye on the ball. So they tend to grow wiser over time. So that's another thing that people have going for them that they don't really appreciate. People don't appreciate that their conscience is guiding them, whether they like it or not. So people tend to feel bad about things that they do that they don't feel they did right by someone, and they may blame the person for the fact that they don't feel right, but there's a conscience at work. So there's a wisdom going on in people that they don't always see or appreciate. And a lot of what I do now when I teach the principles is to point out what's already there and what they're already able to do and what's already happening.
Right.
And give them a different understanding of it so that they can see that these are, you know, this is what the human potential is, that people have this capacity to see the big picture, to have a learning curve, to get over things and reset themselves, to forgive and forget, that they're even the traumas and memories that they have over time get resolved. You get couples that broke up and they had tremendous acrimony, and years later they see each other in a much kinder, more understanding light. So there's a lot of mental health going on in people that they don't really see. And I think what the principles do, Mark, is they highlight that this is the way we are, that this is the nature of human beings to have this understanding and to have this wisdom and to have this mental health. Mm-hmm. So we kind of explain to people when we teach the principles how these things are there, and if they can see them for what they are, they can get behind them and in that way leverage them.
Right. So you're basically just pointing out how the principles are playing out and have been playing out all through the lives, and helping them see that in action for themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, that's very much how it was for me, because before I came across the principles, I'd, like many of us, we go through our ups and downs in life. I'd been through a divorce as a younger man that I took quite hard, and I went through a period of depression for around a period of probably 18 months. And it was actually before I came across the principles that I actually had my own small insight one particular day when I was coming home from work. And I remember I was just about to I was getting out of my van at the end of the day, and I was feeling particularly fed up this particular evening. And then I just had the thought came into my mind that Smollett said to me, "You're only happy when you're unhappy." And it was a very clear moment of seeing that I was doing it to myself.
Mm.
With the repetitive cycle of thinking that I seemed to be going round and round in. And so when I heard you speaking and I've heard other people speaking, well, I had quite a few audios initially. I heard Dickin, I think I had one of Aaron, and also Keith Blevins. And I was really intrigued by what I was hearing, because, well, I think you said at the very beginning of the conversation, you're saying less and less now. And Sydney Banks often talked about, well, he said, didn't he, "Don't listen to my words, you're looking for a feeling."
Mm-hmm.
And I found that more and more with the conversations I've been having over the last two years. I used to be, when I was quite nervous when I first started off, and I was very in my head about getting the principles right, talking about the principles. Was then I found the more I relaxed with my guests into the feeling of where we were going, there was some beautiful stuff came out and some beautiful feedback came out. And sometimes it wasn't very much being said. So I'm just wondering if you'd like to talk a little more about that feeling aspect of the understanding. Is that something you could talk about?
Sure. Well, you know, human beings are let's say, they're deeper into their humanity as their minds are calm and quiet. So when human beings are calm and quiet, when their minds are calm and quiet, they're all the same. They all have a sense of humor. They all are very observant. So that's where we are very much the same. And then as we get caught up in our thinking and pulled into our, you know, separate realities, we all become very different.
Hmm.
So I used to tell people, just to illustrate this point, that if you want to fall in love with someone, watch them when they're sleeping. When people are sleeping, they're very quiet and they're very endearing. Mm-hmm. And I think that when people get quiet and calm and in the moment, they're all the same. They all have the same endearing qualities. And the only time that human beings get into trouble and get into, you know, into difficulties with each other is when they lose that quiet. So when I'm talking to a group of people, like a seminar or something, room gets really quiet and I can see people relaxing and going into that health, into that calm. I feel like they're getting in touch with the spiritual nature of human beings.
Mm.
I think that's what it means to me, Mark, when I'm watching them. And I feel like when they're like really you know, going to learn a lot, they're going to have a sharp learning curve, they're going to have a disproportionate number of insights.
Mm.
So when I'm teaching or working with a client, I'm looking for that quiet and that calm, because that's when people are at their best, and that's when people are the most at home, you might say.
Mm.
And that's different from the work I did before I did this, because I thought that people had to learn through their intellect and had to learn through mental activity, a lot of mental activity and processing and figuring things out. So this is a very different way of teaching people.
And from my own personal experience, I can totally relate. Basically, like I say, and I apologize to the people who heard me talk about my insight in the kitchen. I say it quite often when I was listening to you. I was in a very relaxed space, and quite often the way the seasoned, well, not necessarily just seasoned, there's a lot of great facilitators around now there. They seem to create that space that people can just drop into, and it just takes them out of the busyness of the mind. And I found that very much with you when I was listening to you in that conversation in the kitchen. Like, say, but I'm reminded of when I heard Charles Rosenblatt talk about his experience when he came over to Pransky & Associates to sort some kind of business issue out with his business partner. And he said, and he was kind of laughing, and he said the first 2 days he was just kind of chilling out, and he was getting a bit frustrated because he said nothing was seemed to be happening. We were just kind of all having nice, quiet conversations, and then he said out of nowhere, suddenly the issue was resolved. And I was just hearing that very much in what you were saying then. You're just helping people drop down into their health, and quite often what they thought was an issue, it just seemed to be for what it is, which is just totally thought.
Because you know Mark, I deal a lot with parents and children, you know, because I'm a licensed marriage and family counselor for 40 years. And the parents come back to me and tell me that they had never realized how much being listening and being quiet with their kids and listening to their kids respectfully, how much it changes things for the better, because they'll note that the kids seem to get more intelligent as they listen to their kids. The kids seem to be able to sort things out and change their thinking and see new things for themselves. And there's also, the kids can feel that it's a level playing field, that they're just two human beings trying to work things out. And that alone makes a huge difference in their relationship, not to mention that it's kind of a family lifestyle to do that, to pull out of the upset and the conflicts and the drama and to get back to feeling that ease of being in the moment and being quiet. So the fact that Get Dramatic kind of is a signal to the parent that they're heading in the wrong direction and that they have to pull back rather than dive in.
Well, I can relate. I have two sons who are the grown-up sons now. I had my children quite young, and I just wish I'd had this understanding when my children were children, if you know what I mean.
Because I
can see how many mistakes I was trying to sort things out via the intellect and not really listening to them. And now I can just see that we've all got our wisdom when we're given the space to find it.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I heard somebody talking today, and it just struck me. He said, our true nature lies below the veil of beliefs. And I suppose that in many ways, that's what Sid was talking about when he talked about true nature, our essence, our wisdom. It's there when we're not in please pick me up on my words if I'm not saying how you would say it, but it seems to be that the more we get out of our, the more we disidentify with the busyness of the mind, the more we naturally become quiet anyway and tap into that wisdom.
Yeah, you know, I had an experience about 4 months ago that was very humbling because I thought I kind of understood what the principles were. Mm. And this really woke me up to a whole, you know, a deeper understanding of it. I was sitting in my kitchen and my mind was very peaceful. I was kind of reflective. And all of a sudden, I saw myself putting some concerns in my head,
right,
in my mind, and feeling more concerned as I did that. And then I saw myself putting fears in my mind, things that, you know, I was a little afraid of.
Mm.
And then I saw myself putting, overwhelming my mind with thoughts.
Mm.
Overwhelming my mind with thoughts. And I was distant enough from it, Mark, that it was very curious to me that I would do that. It was like, I'm thinking, why am I doing that? You know, I was doing fine a few minutes ago, and now I'm feeling overwhelmed, and nothing has changed. I'm just sitting here in the chair.
Yeah.
And I began to see that I kind of had been that way my whole life, that I kind of grew up where there was a lot of concern and a lot of overwhelm and people, you know, thinking the days weren't long enough and feeling rushed. And I'd kind of gotten used to that feeling.
Mm.
And I kind of adjusted to it, you might say.
Yeah.
And I adjusted by problem solving and multitasking and all these things. Now, since that experience that I had, when I feel frightened or overwhelmed or concerned, it has a different meaning to me now. Instead of, you know, meaning that I should get up and get going, it means that I'm a little crazy right now.
Mm.
That my mind is playing tricks on me.
Yeah.
So it's much, much easier to fall back into a state of calm when I recognize what it looks like for George Pransky to be a little crazy, and I can recognize it earlier rather than later. It's much easier to return to it.
Yeah.
So that's an example of a person's level of understanding going up, and all of a sudden, the same experiences look different to him.
Yeah. So
this is the way people are. This is how people evolve. They have a raise in their level of consciousness, and then across the board, everything, they experience everything different. They kind of have to live their life at that higher level.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is one of the, well, this is what's been so beneficial in my life. And I know other people's lives who come across this, because it just, instead of being totally entwined with everything that's going on in my head, what used to seem to be about circumstances quite often, now there's more of a witnessing factor for me. For example, I might find myself in some uncomfortable thinking about whatever it may be, but more and more, I find there's more and more opportunity or the ability to just see it and don't make meaning of it. It doesn't necessarily mean that the thinking necessarily for me dissipates straight away. I don't give it as much importance as I would have before, like trying to get rid of the thinking, for example. I had an experience with my partner. It just came to mind, and I apologize to people. I have mentioned this before. There's one day I came home from work, George, and I didn't realize till I got home from work I was feeling grumpy. And I didn't feel I was feeling grumpy until my partner, Sheila, she began to talk to me. And I was in the kitchen. I'd just got out in from work, and I think I was putting the kettle on or something. And she was speaking to me. And I suddenly had the urge to tell her to shut up because she was getting on my nerve. But I suddenly saw that irritation arising in me. And I had the clarity of mind then I just politely said, oh, Sheila, do you mind? I feel a bit grumpy at the moment. Do you mind if we speak later? Whereas in the past, I would have just followed that initial thought to tell her to shut up, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, and interestingly, this was at the weekend, and in the past, it could have led to me snapping at her, and then it would have spoiled the whole weekend. But just from that one little comment and being aware of what was going on with the thought, feeling, connection as quite often talked to her about, I was able to find that clarity and just say, do you mind if we speak later? And then invariably after I had a cup of tea and a shower, my mood had shifted on its own. There was nothing to do. So I'm totally seeing what you're saying on that.
And the thing is, Mark, it doesn't matter how long it takes for it to, you know, for you to reset and get over yourself. It's the direction that matters. In other words, once you realize, wow, I'm just really caught up in my thoughts here, and I'm feeling like telling my wife to shut up. I must be really in bad shape here. You know, it turns it around. In other words, instead of it getting worse, and you're making it worse, it will get better. And it doesn't matter how long it takes to get better. It might take you a long time to get better. You might be, you know, disappointed at how long it takes you to get back to your good feeling about your wife. But it doesn't matter. You're headed in that direction.
Yeah.
And it's the direction that matters. Like, before I learned the principles, there was no amount of stress and distress that would be problematic for me. I just felt like that's life.
Mm-hmm.
So after I learned the principles, I realized that stress and distress was not in the right direction, no matter what the justification.
Yeah.
So that instead of me innocently feeding my stress and distress and going with it and trying to solve it and inadvertently making it worse, it would stop me in my tracks. And I would say, wow, I can't believe how badly I'm feeling. What's going on here? Mm-hmm. And that reverses it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that matters if it gets reversed.
Yeah, just seeing how it all works is just so unbelievably helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's really good because it tells you what's in the right direction and what's not in the right direction. The rest of it we can figure out for ourselves.
Yeah.
Knowing what's in the right direction, what isn't, that's really helpful for people.
Yeah. So, well, I told people, some of my listeners, that I was going to be speaking to you tonight, George, and one or two of them asked them to send me any questions, if they had any questions, and actually a friend of mine, do you mind if I throw some questions at you from my...
No, I love it.
Right. And a friend of mine, Michael, he's been interested in, let's say, truth, for a long time. I know he is, and he came across the three principles a few years ago. And he asked me something about something Sid said in The Missing Link. I think he's got a few misunderstandings, or he's not too sure about what he meant. And I'll just read you what Sid said from The Missing Link, and then I'll read you his question.
Okay.
So it's from The Missing Link, and it's about desires. It said, when the desires of your mind trouble your spirit, your life becomes turmoil. My advice is to learn to free yourself from too many desires. Many people would succeed in life if their ambitions weren't so above their abilities. Many people who strive for the moon begin their journey by tripping over their feet. So in regards to that statement, the question for Michael is, what do you make of that? I'm asking especially since I've just started a course, I think it's with a Three Principles guy, entitled Creating the Impossible. Because of course, so Michael's comment is, in light of his, well, basically, is what do you make of that? Because there's sometimes people are saying you don't need to, in some ways that I'm reading that, the ambitions, people have ambitions above their abilities. And then there's other people saying, oh, you've got to push past your abilities, I think. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I understand it differently. I'm pretty sure, I mean, I don't know what was behind what Sid said, what he would say, but from my understanding of it, it's not desires and expectations are not intrinsically problematic. What matters is your relationship to them.
Right.
So a person can have as many desires as they want, and they can have as strong a desires as they want, and as many expectations as they want, and as strong an expectation. It depends on what importance they put on those in terms of their own well-being. In other words, if their relationship with their desires is such that they're frightened that their life won't work out if they don't meet those desires or satisfy those desires, or if they feel like desires are basically necessary for them to have a good life, then those desires are going to come back to them, because it's going to cause them to be fearful and concerned. But if they see the desires as purely just an idea or something that they want to do, much like people are that way when they play a game, you know. When people, you know, play a game, they understand, well, I'm just, you know, they put the net up in tennis because it makes it a more interesting game. It's not getting in the way. It's just part of the game. So if a person sees the desires as just electives, like they say in colleges, rather than obligatory courses, you know, then they can have as many desires as they want and feel as strongly as they want about those desires. So that it makes perfect sense to me that a person would set a desire that seemed impossible to them on an objective. Why not? You know, as long as you don't mistakenly think that it has anything to do with your own quality of life or your own well-being.
Yeah.
As long as you don't make that mistake. Now, personally, I like and seek out being in over my head. I would prefer to have a job that I didn't think I could accomplish.
Yes.
But the reason that works for me is because I don't place any ultimate importance on whether I'm successful or not.
Right.
Because it's not get off my back if I'm not successful.
You see, it's a game almost.
It's almost like a game. It's almost like, oh, I'll give it a shot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a person's relationship to expectations and desires.
Yeah, and attachments to desire. There's a lot of talk of attachment in spiritual realms, isn't there?
That's what the Buddha talked about. The Buddha talked about attachment being one of the generic sources of unhappiness in life. And he wasn't talking about people having aspirations or ideas. He was talking about the meaning that they put on those, that the meaning that they put on them determined how those aspirations would affect them, the meaning that they personally put on them.
Because there's a lot of talk in spiritual realm, for example, about the freedom from desire, but I've just heard it. It just come to mind then, it's probably obvious to many other people, but I used to think you wouldn't have any desires, but it's, to me, I'm hearing it now that the desires are there, but they don't pull, you're not as pulled by them or as...
So, you know, I remember a story when our kids were like, I'm going to say maybe 6 and 8, our two daughters.
Yeah.
We told them we were going to take them to Disneyland, and they were talking about it at school, and they were talking amongst themselves, and they couldn't wait to go to Disneyland. I mean, they were all over going to Disneyland. And when we got in the car, and packed up the car, they got even more thrilled. Hey, we're going to Disneyland. So we're driving on Route 5 to Disneyland, and my radiator overheats.
Right.
So I pull over on the median strip, and figuring out what I'm going to do because I don't have water and I need water, and how am I going to let it cool down, and I got really upset about it, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, I was in a state about it, and the kids are running around and they're chasing grasshoppers on the median strip, and I got really upset that they were running around, you know, loose like that. And I said, do you know that, you know, if we can't get this car fixed, we're not going to be able to go to Disneyland? The kids kind of said, oh, we're going to Disneyland? They'd forgotten.
Right.
You know, they were so into chasing the grasshoppers around.
In the moment, yeah.
That was what mattered to them. It showed me that their relationship to desires was really good, you know, that they could take it or leave it, but yet that gave them the freedom to get as excited as they wanted about it.
Yeah.
They had no ultimate investment in whether it actually happened or not.
Mm.
They were just fine with chasing the grasshoppers.
Yeah. And I'm just struck there. There's many people who perhaps aim for a goal or something, and they don't necessarily get. They may not necessarily get their initial goal, but they have a great time along the way, and they end up somewhere else. Or I know just from my own life experience how there's things I've set out to do or to achieve, and I may not have always achieved what I initially set out, but it took me in another beautiful direction anyway. So.
And I think it's very healthy for people to fantasize goals that are totally unrealistic and beyond their capabilities. And it's good.
Mm. Stretches.
And sometimes you achieve them, and it surprises you.
Yeah. I've just got to say, I'm reminded when you talked earlier about you like being out of your depth. I was immediately reminded of, I think Kathy Casey was sharing one time with you in a business, and she felt it wasn't going well at all, and then she was stressed out and ready to throw the towel in, and she spoke to you and she said George was over the moon smiling saying, oh, we're up to our neck in our alligators, and you were loving the experience, and it was exactly the same experience. It just really just struck me. struck me, yeah.
The fact that I have a good relationship with failure, really, you know, like failure doesn't frighten me, and being in over my head doesn't frighten me, keeps my mind freer so that my performance actually improves.
Yeah.
See, so it's part of being more successful, the fact that you're not intimidated by the possibility of failure or the fact that you don't have any answers. The fact that that doesn't frighten you keeps your mind in a better place, and that helps you to be more successful.
I'm immediately reminded there of, for some reason, the Zen masters or the Zen warriors came to mind, where they could be in a battle zone and they're just totally calm, even though they're in a very difficult situation. It just reminded me that when you said that. I don't like to harp on about my insights too much, because I was guilty of trying to recreate some of the insights and in the past. But I really would, I'm just curious if I shared my initial big insight with you, and I was just wondering if you can possibly I'll share it with you, and I'll just see if you've got anything to say about it. And when I was listening to you those 5 years ago, and it was interesting, because it's always difficult to put into words, but I'll try. I was listening to you talk about thoughts and the principles, and basically I had a moment where I realized everything was perfect. It just suddenly came to me that everything was perfect. And words always seem to be very inadequate when I'm trying to talk about this insight. But it was almost as if my intellect, the intellectual mind, just stopped for a moment, and I saw what was beyond the mind. And all I could say was, all I realized, that everything was perfect. And it was, I've got to say, it was quite a, people talk about a spiritual understanding or awakening. It did really feel like that. I'm just wondering if that statement of everything being, my realization of everything being perfect, makes any sense to you from your understanding of the three principles? Or is it a bit too mystical?
it's a little bit above my pay grade. If you know, I don't quite see that for myself, Mark. Although I've heard people talk about that, and people say it, and Sid would say it, and I really know that they see that, but it's not something that I see myself. I haven't had that realization.
Right. Yeah, it was problematic for me, because I saw it and then it seemed to disappear almost instantly. It was almost like quite often there's the metaphor in the three principles about the sun appearing from behind the clouds and then it disappears, but you can't deny you've seen the sun. It was very much yeah. That. But I just thought
the most puzzling experience I've had, the most mystical experience I've had, is I was in Los Angeles and I was in a terrible state. Oh, just awful. I've never been so down in my life. And I was so bummed out that I didn't have any energy, any physical energy.
Yeah.
So I was in the Los Angeles airport. And there was this bench there, and I just laid down on the bench, and I apparently fell asleep on the bench. Somebody called security because they thought I was dead. You know, they called security, and security woke me up and when the security woke me up, I had this vision of life as just a buzzing isness. You know, it was just like, it was all just energy. The colors were coming together. It was like what Sid talked about when he had his experience. It was very, life seemed like it was just unformed and fluid. And I had that experience, and it was so strong that I went back to my room and I had to shut out the lights because otherwise it was too stimulating.
Right.
And then later that was completely gone as if it never happened.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Kind of what you were saying, it was there and then it was gone. You know?
Yeah.
And then it's just a theory of some sort, you know.
Yeah, and then trying to analyze, perhaps overanalyze it too much afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to ask you another challenging question, or maybe not. I'd like to ask you about free will. I was listening to something recently about, because we talk a lot about thought in the three principles, and this particular conversation, it was a scientist or a neuro. I'm not sure what his qualifications were, but he sounded to understand quite a lot about neuroscience. And he was saying, it seems that we make choices. And he was saying, I actually wrote it down. He said, in the neuroscience, there's something called the readiness potential. And basically saying the thought activity for a choice starts almost 1 second before a person realizes that they are choosing. I was just wondering how that relates to free will and the principles.
And well, free will is really, using that phrase again, beyond my pay grade. Like, I don't really understand the notion of free will.
Yeah.
I can tell you my understanding of it, but I think my understanding of it is very, very limited, okay?
Right.
My understanding of free will is that people, and it goes back to the readiness, I like that word, that every time you go up to a higher level of consciousness, and that's the thing about the principles, the most important thing about the principles, in my mind, is Sid introduced the idea of a vertical dimension where you can go to a higher level of consciousness, and when you do, everything across the board changes. All boats rise with the tide. Okay? The amount of free will that you have, in my understanding, is tied to your level of consciousness. So when you go up a higher level, there are things that you are ready to see and ready to do and ready to think about that you weren't ready to do and think about at the lower level.
Yeah.
You see, so for example, taking myself as an example, there was a time when I felt social pressure. I felt pressure from my father. I felt pressure from what my peers thought of me. I felt pressure from my wife and her expectations. So I felt like I had certain obligations and pressures that I had to, you know, put up with as a human being.
Yeah.
Okay. I went to a higher level of understanding. I couldn't imagine why I felt social pressure. It's not that I didn't feel it. I couldn't imagine why I even felt it in the first place.
Yeah.
I don't know, what does it matter what my father thinks of what I'm doing?
Yeah.
You know, and that's when you know you've moved to a higher level, when you don't even know why you thought that in the first place, see?
Yeah.
So to take that scientist's view, you could say that I was ready to think, to let go of the thoughts of social pressure. So that was my free will. I had the free will to do that at that level. And I didn't have that choice at a lower level.
Right, yeah.
So every time you go up to a higher level, there's certain things that you can, you're ready to do at that higher level that you weren't ready to do at a lower level. That's why, from a principal's perspective, it's a lot easier to go to a higher level than it is to struggle with what you can't do at this level.
Yeah.
So if you want to change, it's a lot easier to go to a higher level and then the changes will happen than it is to try to force yourself to change with your willpower at this level.
Yeah.
Can I give you another example?
Yeah.
I had this client that he was an industrialist. He owned a whole bunch of companies and he was very overwhelmed and gotten really down in the dumps about his professional life. And we used to meet at 7:30 every morning and we'd have breakfast together. That was the only way he would see me. I would go to this hotel, he'd buy me breakfast and we'd talk for an hour and a half. And he was a good student. He caught on to the principles and he'd say to me, "Gee, George, I'm way overweight. I'm 60 pounds overweight. I'm smoking. I'm having affairs. I'm drinking too much. I have a very unhealthy diet. How are you going to solve these things?" And I said to him, "Well, Bill, those will take care of themselves as you gain more understanding." "Well, I don't see that. That sounds ethereal." I said, "Well, that's the way we're going to do it. I mean, if you don't like that, go to someone who does willpower work, you know?"
Yeah.
So we talked and he caught on. And the first thing that happened is he came in and I said, "How you been doing, Bill?" He says, "Good. I just got back from walking around the lake." I said, "Really? I didn't know you were walking around." Yeah, he said, "Yeah, I got a bunch of buddies, and we walk around the lake for exercise." I said, "Well, that's great." He says, "Yeah, I didn't used to do anything. Now I'm walking around the lake." And then he told me later that because he was walking around the lake and getting into better shape, he was more sensitive to how food was affecting him. And he said that his diet was improving. So then he says to me, "So my diet's improving, but I'm still smoking. I'm smoking over a pack a day." I said, "Look, Bill, you know how you were ready to exercise and you just fell into exercising? And then you were ready to eat better, okay? You'll be ready to stop smoking.
Yeah.
You'll be ready to stop having affairs. You'll be ready to stop drinking. It's just a different level. You have to get a critical mass of understanding before you're ready to stop smoking."
Mm.
Now, he thought that was just a cop-out on my part. You know, he said, "Oh, easy for you to say. You're not the one that's smoking." But if you talk to him today, he'd say, "Well, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
As I got healthier, I reacted badly to smoking and I stopped smoking. And then I just was feeling a lot better overall and a lot more peaceful and calm. And then the whole idea of having an affair was too complicated, you know, keeping the wife from knowing it. And I dropped the affair. And when I dropped the affair, I felt differently about my wife. And then I didn't even want to have an affair." So he would tell you about a journey that he took. And the journey is a journey of readiness.
Yeah.
It's a journey of being ready, having more free will at a higher level of consciousness. So when he was with me, all he was interested in, all I was interested in, was raising his level. Because I knew that as soon as his level went up, it would solve a lot. He'd be ready to solve a lot of the problems that he had.
Yeah, you don't have to do it. Solve the problems individually; they solve themselves out. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I made of that guy's notions of readiness and free will, is what I just said.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. Thanks for that, George. And I'm just reminded of that metaphor that you loosely mentioned before, which I think is a beautiful metaphor about the once you get a grasp of the understanding, like all the boats in the harbour rise with the tide.
With the tide, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a beautiful thing, because when your level goes up, you have to relive your life at that higher level.
Yeah.
So the same things that you were doing before, you will relate to differently.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes that's a bummer. So, for example, when you go to a higher level, you're not going to like some of the ways you've treated important people in your life.
Yeah.
Because at that higher level, you're seeing it clearer. So you're going to feel, oh, my word, what am I doing? And you might feel bad, or you might feel like you owe them an apology.
Yeah.
You might your conscience might bother you about some of the ways you're going about your life at a higher level. Because when you go to a higher level, your conscience goes to that higher level.
Yeah.
And your standard of conduct is higher.
Yeah.
And your tolerance to stress is lower.
Mm.
So when you go to a higher level, the amount of stress that you took for granted at that lower level is now uncomfortable.
Mm.
You don't like it. It doesn't feel good to you.
Mm.
And that forces you to drop it.
Mm.
So when I was using my example, Mark, when, you know, before I went to that higher level about seeing myself putting overwhelming thoughts in my head.
Yeah.
Before I had that raise in my level of consciousness, I had coping mechanisms to deal with overwhelm.
Right.
Right? I just accepted it as a way of life. But then when I went to the higher level, it didn't make sense to me that I felt overwhelmed.
No.
So I had a lower tolerance for that stress. Sometimes people feel like they've gotten worse when they go up to a higher level because they feel the stress more.
Right.
But it's not. It's a good thing to feel the stress more, to be puzzled by the fact that you're stressed.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate to that myself. It's just these days, for example, I still get stressed, but I'm like you said, the puzzlement arises about it, and sometimes even understand, especially because I've got an understanding, whatever level of understanding it is about the principles, it's like, oh, this is interesting. There's all this stress is here now. What's all this about? Well, I won't keep you much longer, George. There was one more question I had from one of my listeners.
Sure.
I've got it on my...
I love the questions, Mark. I love to answer questions.
Well, you're like Jack then. I've become quite pally with Jack. He's a very big mentor of mine. He loves the questions as well. One second to see if I can find it. Okay, here it is. Right. Now, this lady's from Denmark, so she's done very well in trying to write it out in English for me. But I'll see if you can get it. It's a bit complex. It seemed a bit complex. So I'll read it out and we'll see if we can work through it. This is from Anna Grete. And my question is about understanding the highs and lows more deeply. Why is it that after years of knowing and understanding more and more, coming deeper into the three principles, why is it then you suddenly go down, as in really down? And it seems like you know how the feelings come from your way of thinking, let's say the habitual way of playing the game, but you can't see through it, even if you look at it from the observer point of view. At some point, you do see through. That is when you think you
you do, and then again, not because you go down again. The thing you can see is that you can't see, like you're understanding in a gap of in between something. And this gap seems to be quite uncomfortable, unsecure, and unknown. Did you understand that, George?
Yeah, I do. And actually, it illustrates my point about levels of consciousness really well.
Good.
You see, no matter what level of consciousness you're at,
yeah,
you're still going to have ups and downs.
Yes.
What changes is not that you have the ups and downs, but the fact that you understand them differently.
Mm.
They have a different meaning to you. So, for example, using her as an example, there was a time when she didn't even know there was such a thing as an up and a down. Right?
Yeah.
It's just life, and life is difficult, and I have this problem. There was no such, she didn't even know that there was such a thing as an up and a down.
Yeah.
Okay? At a higher level of consciousness, she noticed, well, sometimes I, even about the same circumstances, I seem to, react to them really badly, and other times I don't react to them as badly. Huh, that's a variable in there. There's such a thing as an up and a down. And then later she realizes, wow, that's coming from my own thinking. So the ups and the downs mean something different to her. And when they mean, it's just my own thinking, they don't affect her as much.
Hmm.
So that's why you call it a higher level of consciousness, because it doesn't have as much of a detrimental effect. You get over things faster. But it feels, at once you see, it's just thought, then it feels bad to you that you still have downs.
Yeah.
You see? But the good news is you even see the possibility that you wouldn't have downs is a high level of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people will find themselves intolerant of their downs.
Yes.
Now, you might say, that's too bad. Yeah, but compare that with being completely tolerant of your downs and thinking that it has nothing to do with you. I mean, that's what you have to compare it with.
Yeah.
What a mess, and how long would your downs be, and how much strife and struggle would you have if you didn't even take any responsibility for your downs?
Yeah.
Compared to being impatient that you're still down.
Yeah.
And making matters worse, Mark, is everybody can see a higher level of consciousness beyond where they are. It looks unrealistic to them, but they can visualize it.
Hmm.
Well, that can make a person dissatisfied with where they are. So, for example, one day they go in and out of their moods really gracefully, and they say, well, gee, why can't I do that every day?
Yeah.
But the thing is, going back to that neuroscientist, you're not ready to do it every day. You don't have the understanding to do that every day. But when you do that every day, I guarantee you, you'll be saying, why can't I do this? Which is higher. So those are the variables that this woman from Denmark should consider, that when you go to a higher level, you still have the same experiences. It's just that you view them in a different light.
Yeah.
And whatever level you're at, you're always going to see higher ground, which is good. That's hopeful.
Mm.
But it also opens the possibility that you'll be impatient and be greedy about it.
Yeah. That was my experience initially when I first got a taste of this understanding. I thought, and then I saw thoughts arising. I think, I shouldn't be. I saw irritated thinking arise, for example. And then I would get quiet. I'd be beating myself up because I initially had the silly idea that once I'd seen it, that irritation would automatically just dissolve immediately once I was onto it.
Yeah.
Because of course, it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you see it for what it is and it immediately drops away. But like I said, that incident with me in the kitchen with my partner, it didn't, although the feeling didn't drop away, there was that clarity to approach the situation differently than I did before. And that's so powerful in life when you've got that understanding, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, it is. Yeah. It's priceless.
Yeah. Well, George, I've been, when I very first started these interviews like 2 years ago, I knew I wanted to speak to you. So I'm so pleased that it's finally happened. And I really enjoyed speaking to you. Now, I know many people who listen to this are already aware of you and your work, but would you like to give your details and say of any events you're involved with before we call it a day?
Well, yeah. I mean, we have a website, Pransky&Associates.com. And as a matter of fact, we're coming over to, I'll be in London in 2 weeks. And I'm doing an evening there for Tukun,
right?
KUN. So if people looked on that website, they'd see the evening that I'm doing over there. And then I'm going to be in Norway in March.
Cool.
And you can email my office, mail@Pransky & Associates, and find out about the Norway event. I don't even know myself when it is.
Right. It's so great. This is getting out all over the place, isn't it? I remember speaking to him, and he'd been in Norway as well, I think.
Yeah, I know. It's going all over Europe, particularly, you know.
Yeah. Well, I've been very touched by...
And the other thing, let me say one more thing.
Sorry, George, go on.
We put together, my daughters and myself, put together an internet course called Insight. And it's a very well laid out, very thorough exploration of the principles. And you can get that off our website, but I highly recommend that course. It's really a good way to get a deep, understanding of the principles. It's 8 weeks long and it's an hour a week.
Cool. Yeah, well, everything I've seen you guys involved with has always seemed to me really powerful, great stuff. So I can only recommend Pransky & Associates stuff to people out there. It's all great stuff, George.
Well, thank you for the interview, Mark. I love doing these interviews, and I like the fact that you're doing all these interviews and getting the message out in the world.
Yeah, I just feel it's my own little passion. So, and people seem to be appreciating them here and there. So that's it's all good stuff. So George, thank you once again. Thank you so much for your time. Would you just stay on the air after we finish the recording? I'll just have a brief word with you.
But, sure.
I'm not sure who my guest will be next week. I've got a few people lined up, but I'm not sure who it's going to be. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me. Well, it's not my email address is the initials for Ice Cream for the Soul, which is ic4ts@hotmail.com. And if anybody wants to get in touch with me, get in touch with me there. I've got the event coming up in April with Jack, with George's cousin, Dr. Jack Pransky, going trekking with Jack in the beautiful Spanish countryside. So if anybody's interested in that, give me a shout on that. So thanks again, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks again, George. Thank you. Bye, everybody. Thank you.